when Mike Richardson asked me to do this about 9 months ago, I was really excited because this is an area of priorities and use of time that I have been struggling with, and I emphasize the word struggling, for the last 5 to 7 years of my own life, just trying to get control of my time and trying to begin to run my life rather than having it run me. And when he asked me to do this, I was excited because I knew that not only did I have some things to share from my personal life about victories and defeats, but this would make me study and see what some other guys had said and try to pick up some terms from them so that this thing could be more easily communicable. And that's what I've attempted to do. So, I hope we can start out and end up at the same place. The reason we need to study priorities and use of time is because life is short. And it doesn't matter how long you're going to live, whether you live to be 40, 70, or 18, life is short in relation to eternity. It is short. King David said in Psalm 39:4, Lord, help me to know how brief my time on earth will be. Help me to know that I'm here for but a moment more. Life is short. The apostle said in James 4:14, whereas you do not know about tomorrow, what is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Now, gang, life is short. For that reason, we must know how to live it. And time is the issue. It doesn't matter how much time you have. What matters is how do you use the time you have. God will not hold us responsible for any 30 years that He didn't give us. Now, that just makes sense. The Apostle Paul in Ephesians 5:15 and 16 gives us the verse that's the key verse for this study. Ephesians 5:15 and 16 says this, therefore be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil. Be careful how you walk. Therefore, that's what we're going to study this afternoon. God willing, we'll try to develop some kind of a strategy for life that I hope will be a help to you to live life more productively, to get everything you can get out of every hour that God gives you in productivity and in quality living. Let's pray, and then we'll begin. Heavenly Father, we desire for you to speak to our hearts by your Holy Spirit. God, we are in total need of you, and we are very tired. We have heard much, and we have said much. Probably our learning hearing potential right now is greatly reduced from what it was this morning. Therefore, we ask that you would guide our hearts, place the thoughts in our minds that you wish to germinate, cause to grow. In Jesus' name, amen. Well, I want you to copy this little diagram down because I'm going to have to erase it and write it back 2 or 3 times. I want you to have it in front of you. Where we begin is priorities and use of time is with goals. We need goals. Goals determine how we live our life. Everybody has them. Everybody has goals. We live our life according to our goals. Well, we need priorities, is the second word. Priorities help us determine which goals to use. I mean, we've got goals. We already have those. Priorities tells us which ones are bad, or which ones we need to use, and which ones we don't need to use. Well, once we establish that, we come to the plans. The plan determines whether or not we reach our goals. The plan is the method by which we reach our goals, or by which we fail to reach them, whatever it may be. And after we've established our goals according to our priorities and established some plans, then we live life. Just put living. That's where life is lived. And that's where we're going. We don't study priorities and use of time so that we can have the notes written down in our notebook and share them with everything that moves. You know, that's not the objective. The objective is to live life more abundantly. To have more quality in quantity. You know, that's our goal. So our strategy for living is simply set your goals, establish priorities to help you know which goals to use, establish some plans for reaching your goals, and then live out your plans and see what happens. So first of all, we want to turn to goals. Turn our attention to goals and what the goals are and all that. Now, a goal is very simple. Nothing profound about the definition. A goal is simply a statement of how you hope something's going to be in the future. I mean, it's this way now, and my goal is how I want it to be in the future. Whatever that is, that's a goal. Nothing profound about that. Now, everybody has goals. Let me repeat that again. To say you do not have goals is a mistake. You live your life according to what your goals are. That determines what you do every day. The problem is, most people's goals are bad or foggy. And since our goals are what control our lives, it makes sense that if we better our goals, we will better our life. If our goals improve, our living will improve, because that's what controls what we do. Now, we're speaking in the realm to Christians. If any of you are not Christians, then the first goal you need to have is to find Christ as your Savior. And I believe God is opening the door very wonderfully this weekend. It will be an outstanding time. But we're speaking specifically to Christians. I am convinced that most of God's children, born-again Christians, live their life in what I call a continual state of fog. They do not have the slightest idea where it is they're going. And since you don't know where you're going, any road will get you there. I mean, if you don't have any idea where you're going, then it really doesn't matter what road you choose. Just pick one. And we do. Christians live life according to this. We live according to our circumstances. If our circumstances sweep us over here, we live over here. If our circumstances sweep us over here, we live over here. If our circumstances sweep us here, we live here. And we're simply tossed about. You know, we live in a continuous state of fog. Well, we need to understand the difference between a purpose and a goal. Most of us have pretty good purposes. The problem is we have sorry goals. Now, a purpose is simply something you want to do, something you want to achieve, but it's probably not measurable, something you want to achieve. For instance, a purpose would be, I want to be a good father. I could say, that's a purpose. I want to be a good father. Now, that's a good purpose, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's a very good purpose. But it's not a goal because it's not measurable and it can't, you know, it's nothing that we can accomplish or at least measure it. A goal would be to put that thing in some kind of terms where it would be measurable. For instance, I want to be a good father. Therefore, one thing that I'm going to do is I'm going to start spending 2 hours every Saturday with my little girl doing what she wants me to do. Whatever she wants to do, I'll do it. That would be a goal. 2 hours of Saturday. See, I can get a hold of that. I can grab a hold of 2 hours of Saturday and I can understand that. I can measure it and I can accomplish it. Now, many of us have very grand purposes, but without having a goal, the purpose means nothing. I have a friend when I was serving in a church in Oklahoma. He was serving in a church in Oklahoma. We'll call him Bob. That wasn't his name, but we'll call him that. Take the innocent. And Bob was one of these guys, we'd stand up and just preach the stars down. And he had some great messages about what fathers were supposed to be, and you know, you guys lead your homes. And the only problem was he never stayed home. Great messages. He'd just, you know, give an invitation and hundreds flock down and rededicate their lives to be better fathers and everything. Just preach the stars down. But he was never at home. One problem with preaching, it's easier to preach than it is to live. He's one of these guys, just boundless energy, could go 24 hours a day, would never sleep. And if there was nothing going on, he'd find something to do. He's just an incredible guy. But he was never at home. One day his pastor called him in, he said, Bob, you and I need to have a little visit. He said, you know, you are a fine staff member. He said, you're pretty much everything I want as far as a staff member. He said, you're loyal to me, you work hard, you work well with the staff, you're not a jealous type guy, you love the people, your ministry skills are good. He said, Bob, you're just about everything I want. He said, but do you know something? He said, you could drop dead today, and we'd all miss you. I'd preach a nice funeral, talk about all the good things you've done. For a few days, our office setup would be kind of messed up, deciding who does whose work. But he said, Bob, from 6 weeks to 3 months later, we would have a brand new staff member in your place, and life would go right on. He said, matter of fact, do you know who the only ones are that would miss you significantly? Your family. Because they are the only ones that would be greatly affected if you were to drop dead. Your wife and those children. He said, therefore, doesn't it make sense that maybe you should spend more time at home with the people who would be significantly affected if you left, rather than with all the people that really would not be significantly affected? Now see, Bob's problem was not that he didn't have a purpose. He had one. Man, I'm going to be a great father. He really believed that. He really wanted to do that. Quote you some verses on that. Problem was, he didn't have a goal. Now, I want to make sure you understand this. I'm going to read 6 sentences, and I want you to tell me which one's a purpose and which one's a goal. Now remember, a purpose is a good thing, but it's not measurable and a goal is. So you tell me which of these is a purpose and which is a goal, so I'll be convinced that we're all together. I want to be a more gracious person. Is that a purpose or a goal?
Purpose.
It's a good purpose. Nothing wrong with that, but it's not a goal. I want to spend 15 minutes a day in prayer. That's a goal. You can get a hold of that. You know, 15 minutes a day. I can get that. Read one book a week. That's a goal. You can grab a hold of that. Read the Bible more often.
Purpose.
That's a good purpose. But that's all it is a purpose. Become a better tennis player.
Purpose.
Good purpose. Just, it's a purpose. Tie the minimum of 10% of my income. That's a goal. See, I can get a hold of that. Now, do you understand the difference? It's one thing to have a purpose and to say, I want to do this. It's another thing to establish a goal to do it. Now, let me share with you how this worked out in my own life. When my wife and I got engaged about, let's see, we've been married almost 5.5 years, 6.5 years ago when we got engaged. We said, our purpose for our marriage was this. We want to have the greatest marriage that the world's ever seen. That was the purpose that we established. You know, we want to have the finest marriage that the world's ever seen. And that was a good purpose. Now, unfortunately, many other young Christian couples that get married would say the same thing. And that obviously won't do it because I'm now facing some of them across my desk in counseling situations. So obviously, that purpose is not enough. And we knew that. And we said, you know, that's not just going to happen by accident. We are not automatically going to have a good marriage just because we say we want to have one. I mean, that's not going to happen by osmosis. We're not just going to stumble into that. So we set some goals, and we decided at least for the first year of our marriage, you know, in those early days, there when you're kind of getting indoctrinated to your mate, we decided on my days off, which are Friday, we'll spend every day off together. Rather than her going and doing something or me going and doing something, you know, me going out playing golf or whatever, we'd spend it together just getting to know one another and talking and visiting and sharing difficulties and, you know, not necessarily reading the Bible or praying. That's all good, but that was not part of our goal. Just spending time together getting to know one another. Because we believed if we did that, we'd be building a groundwork for our marriage. And we set one night a week aside where we'd stay home. That was like Tuesday night, I think, that first year. Well, we did that. And boy, God blessed that first year. Because our marriage got off to a solid basis. Now, if all we had done was have a purpose, I guarantee you we would not have done that. Now, I was on the staff of this large church. And so many people were making decisions, and I don't know how many rededications I counseled over the years, hundreds that would run down the aisle, and you know what almost every one of them said? Sincerely now, heartfelt decision, but they would say, I want to do better. I want to live a better life. Inevitably, they would say that. I want to do better. I want to be a better Christian. You know, if I went back today and looked those people up, you know what they'd still be saying? I want to do better. I want to be a better Christian. The problem is not their insincerity. The problem was they didn't have a goal. And I would often try to ask them, well, where do you think you need to do better? Why did you think you need to rededicate your life to begin with? And I'd often try to bring that down so they could see, well, now this is not just going to happen. The fact that I walk down the aisle, God is not going to automatically bless my life. And most of them, you know, go ye therefore and rededicate your life. That's about as deep as they're ever going to get. And the Baptists are the worst at it in the world. We are the very worst. We have more lost people rededicating their lives per Sunday than most people win during the course of the year. You know. But see, the problem is they have a purpose. They don't have a goal. Well, now when you have a goal, you know, you line up a bunch of goals. Maybe you get 15 goals there. Boy, you're all fired up. You got your goals written down. You got them color-coded and the whole bit. Well, then you need some way to decide which goals do I use. And that's where priorities come in. Let's just say these are all your goals. You line all those up. Maybe there's 10 or 12 or 15 of them or what. You write all those down. Goals. Those are the 12 things or whatever that I want to do. Those are the things I want to accomplish. Well, your priorities then tell you which goals do I do. Now, all prior means is before. The word prior means it comes before. You do this before you do that. Priority means I'm going to do this before. Priorities help us determine which goals to use. For instance, some questions you might ask about some of your goals. Well, how important is that goal? I mean, really, how important is it? It seems to me that goal is going to cost me 3 hours a week in precious time. How important is that in the light of 3 hours? Could I better spend that 3 hours? Is that goal important enough to spend 3 hours at? Can someone else do it as well or better? I mean, if it involves a job, can somebody else do that better than I can? And if so, why am I doing it? Is it part of the larger picture? I mean, does it fit into my life? How does this goal fit into my life? And what will happen if it isn't done? I mean, if I just don't do this goal, what would happen? Would my life be affected in any way, or would it matter? Well, you get to that place, and you might want to just rate your goals. Rate them A, B, or C goals. The ones that have to be done, that you feel like are absolute musts. I mean, you must do it. Let's rate those A. This looks like an A goal here, and oh, that's an A goal there. Oh, that's an A goal right here. We need to do that. Have to do that. Well, then we got some goals that should be done, but they're not absolute musts. I mean, they should be done. They're important, but they're not as important as A goals. We'll label them B. Here's a B here, and here's two Bs, and here's a B down there. Those are should goals. And the others are kind of, well, I could do that. Those are could goals, like I'm going to learn to play tennis. That's a could goal. I'm going to read Call of the Wild. You know, that's a could goal. I'm going to get a date. For some of you, that's a faith goal. I realize that. That was heartfelt conviction over there, sister. I appreciate that. So now you rate your goals, and as you sit back and look at them, you now have a way of deciding, well, which goals do I work at? Because see, if you've got 15 or 20 goals, you don't have time to do them all. Not right now, anyway. You have to decide, well, what do I want to do this year? Or what do I want to spend most of my time at right now? I don't have time to do them all, so I need to decide what's most important. And the way that we do that in the light of God's leading is through the Scriptures. He establishes our priorities for us. Now, gang, let me just say this. This is not a workshop on getting into the Bible, but let me say this. You will never arrive at the mind of God apart from the Scriptures. It is absolutely foolish to make the statement, God, I'm going to give you my life, and I'm going to do exactly as you say, if you are not actively devouring large hunks of the Bible. Because you cannot please God if you do not know what it is that pleases God. Now, I'm not very quick, but I can figure that out. I mean, if you're going to try to please somebody, you have to know what it is that pleases them. And for somebody to say, I love Jesus Christ and He's more important to me than anything else and I want to give Him my life and do everything He says, and then you can't get that person to read the Bible effectively to save your life, I'm not too impressed with that. So we establish our priorities according to that. Well, let's race on here before we all go to sleep. Next, and this is the key issue. We'll spend most of our time right here. Once we've gotten our goals established, and we know which ones we're going to do first according to our priorities, this comes to the plan. This, to me, is by far the hardest part. And yet it is absolutely essential that you plan. Ecclesiastes 10:10, the wisdom for modern man, says, if your axe is dull, if you don't sharpen it, you have to work harder to use it. Smarter to plan ahead. And that's true. Now, a plan, once again, is nothing profound. A plan is just trying to discover how to accomplish your goals. Nothing too tough about that, but that's all it is. A plan is just figuring out, how do I accomplish my goals? How do I move from where I am now to where I want to be then? How do I get that in my life? That calls for planning. Now, if you just have goals and priorities, no matter how good they are, and you don't have plans, you are blowing smoke, and you will never get beyond that. When I first got into this thing about 6 or 7 years ago, I mean the 1st of January, I opened my little notebook up and I wrote out these goals and I had them color-coded and then I listed them and I had them according to priorities. Looked great. I probably shared it with somebody, probably spoke on it then. I don't remember. Put it in the, and just promptly forgot about it. And in July, I was flipping through my little spiritual notebook, you know, which in itself was a misnomer considering. And there were my goals. And here, 7 months gone by. And I had not done that. Well, they sure do look good in there in my notebook. Look at this. This is blue here, and this is a red one. Those really look good. To establish goals and priorities without making a plan, you're blowing smoke. And not holy smoke. Just smoke. And it's very important to plan. That's the hardest thing for me to do. Now, plans. We need to say some things about plans. Plans are changeable. You know, we can't get hung up on plans. They'll change. If you get into them, if you make a plan and it turns out to be a bad plan, change it. There's nothing holy about that. A plan is a tool. It's to be used. It's not to use us. But plans are so important because besides moving us toward our goal, which is what they do, a second thing they do is they help us communicate to others that we know where we're going. Oh, that's important. You know, guys, some of you aspire to be husbands someday. It will be a tremendous help to your leadership if you can not only tell your wife, this is where I think we should go, but if you can show her, this is how I think we can get there. if she has some idea that you at least are in the ballpark about where you're going, she will follow a whole lot easier. Everybody's like that. I mean, it's one thing to set priorities and tell your people this is where we're going. It's another thing to show them how we're going to get there so they have a vision. I had a friend at another church that was a youth director that is single-handedly, and is a great guy and everything, loves God and he loves the people, but he's single-handedly the most disorganized guy that God's ever put on the face of the earth. If he had been in the Garden of Eden, there would have been no problem with sin. He could not have found the apple. It would have been on his desk somewhere. The most disorganized guy on the face of the earth. And I mean, his people were a wreck. He would plan a choir trip or something, and his leaders were just like this. A week before the trip, when he's transporting 50 kids across the whole nation in buses, and people are asking, well, do we need to take our own bedding or anything? Bedding? What, are we going to eat on the way? Do we take sack lunches? Eat? Where do we stay? I mean, where do we stay? Well, I think, now so-and-so told me that his youth director had told him up there. And I believe we do that. And I mean, his leaders were like this. They were just an absolute wreck. Well, the education minister at this church came to me and said, Trent, I really think you need to start planning these things a little better. You know what he said? This is a classic. He said, I work better under pressure. Well, now to begin with, that's not true because nobody works better under pressure. Because when you're under pressure, you make pressure mistakes. And secondly, his leadership, they were just falling apart. Because, I mean, there are kids going on this trip and nobody knew what was happening. It is so important to plan. If you want somebody to follow you, it's good to tell them where you're going. Planning is also important because it helps solve problems. When you plan well, you have to look ahead at what might happen and figure out what you're going to do if it does. Talking about trips, I have a ski trip planned in 7 weeks to the mountains of Colorado, and I'm taking 65 of my university students. Man, that's a pain. There are a lot of things involved in that trip. I had to start months ago figuring out, well, first of all, where do I want to go? Well, if we go there, where do we get our equipment? How much will it cost? How much do the lift tickets cost? Can I get a discount or any free comp tickets if I have so many people there? Well, what time do we have to leave to get to the lodge in time to eat the evening meal and also in time to check out the equipment so that we're ready to go the next morning? Well, how late does the ski shop stay open the last night so when we get through skiing we can check the equipment in so we can leave early the next morning? Well, I'm taking 6 bands. If one of them breaks down, do I have enough space in those other 5 to load those kids on and get them on to Colorado with 1 van left there in a town being fixed? Well, how much will it cost to take those bands? But see, I have to do all that because it's going to come up. And I'd much rather it come up now when I'm sitting in my air-conditioned office with my secretary sitting there and I can order her to go do anything and she has to do it. Than to get caught out in West Texas and have something come up and me not have thought through it. For instance, this conference you're attending is the finest organized conference I have ever seen. I've spoken at many, attended dozens, and this is the best organized conference I have ever seen. Mike Richardson has backups to backups. You wouldn't believe what he's got for those of us that are the leaders. He's got a tape machine. He's got me an alternate tape machine. He's got 2 or 3 alternate tapes. He's got alternate lecterns. He has a moderator in here that does all this stuff and gets me anything. And he's got this thing planned to the hilt. Now see, the reason is that things are going to go wrong. But it's better to be able to adjust the things that go wrong that you weren't sure of than to have everything go wrong that you should have been sure of. And if you've never had the blessing of planning something poorly and having it fall apart on you, then you need to do that. Because it'll greatly alter your life. To have some people who are depending on you walk up and say, what do we do now? You do not have the slightest idea. Now, if you've never had that happen, may that happen to you. And another thing that planning does, it makes praying easier. For this reason, when you have done your job and you have planned as well as you are humanly possible, humanly capable of planning, and then something goes wrong, it's much easier to commit that to God and say, God, would you please do something, than it is to have to go to God when you know in your heart that you did a sorry job and you could have done it better and now everything is falling apart and you need to go say, God, now I know I didn't do this like I should have, but could you get me out of it? Now, he might, but he also might say, now, lad, I want you to remember this one, and I believe it would be real good for you to work your way out of this. You know? I was in charge of the buses at my last church, and we had a single adult ski trip going out that I was not in charge of. They were going to Colorado or New Mexico or someplace, and they were leaving like on a Wednesday night at 5 o'clock, and I had to get all the buses ready. And a bus driver, of course, had to get off work for 3 days. And I had all that lined up, and I even tried to get an alternate. I couldn't get one, but I really wasn't too concerned about it because we had our main driver there. And I'd done my job to the T, and I thought, well, everything's great till 9 o'clock that Wednesday morning when my bus driver called. I said, Mike, sick, can't go. Well, now, you don't send an untrained bus driver in a diesel bus into snowy mountains when they're carrying 40 people. You know, you just don't scrape a bus driver up at the last minute and do that. Or else you have what happened in southern New Mexico a few years ago. And I thought, he said he was sick, and I'm going to tell you, he wasn't the only one who was sick. I thought, oh, good night. 40 of those single adults are going to come rolling up to that church at 5 o'clock, ready to go. And there will be the diesel and no driver. But I had done my job, and I knew that. And I called my wife over in desperation, you know, and she prays, God listens. And I called her over there and I said, Debbie, I'm not sure I could do something. You know, I was totally in control. My faith never wavered. And we knelt down beside the couch and I prayed something like this. I said, now, Lord, you know, as much as I know, I've done my job right here. I've tried to be faithful and I've tried to plan this thing. And as much as I know, I've done my job. And I couldn't foresee old Benton getting sick. And I sure would appreciate it if you'd do something. Because I don't know what to do. And so help me, about 45 minutes later, Benton called me back and he said, Mike, I'm feeling better. I think I can go. And he did. Well, now, I'm not saying God can't bail us out when we make a mistake. He can, and thank God. But I'm saying, let's don't test him and make him do it. You know, God, I'm leaning over the edge of this cliff. And I believe that you can catch me. Well, he can. But he may not. You know, and it would be good for us to keep that in mind. Let me share a little chart with you. Oh, if I can get the eraser here that works. I hope this will communicate what I'm trying to say because it's a practical little thing and I think it might help you to see the need of planning. Let me just pick a girl. We'll just say her name is Sue and she becomes a Christian, okay? Is Sue just a new babe in Christ? And I mean, every time she goes to church, somebody preaches on the premillennial theory or something, or the Holy Spirit and the 41 things he does and the 8 things he can't do because it's against the rules. And, you know, how you have to pray and when Jesus is coming back and prayer and the Bible and how to witness 31 ways effectively. You know, I mean, the poor girl is getting hit from every direction. She goes to her pastor and she said, Pastor, I mean, I've been saved and everything. I'm trying to read the Bible, but there's so much I don't understand. Can you help me? And he said, listen, I think what might help you, you need to get, you know, keep doing what you're doing, but let me get you some good Christian books. He said, some men and women have written on some of these things, and I believe it would be a help to you. And he said, why don't you just set a goal to try to read a certain number of Christian books? And she said, well, I'll do it. So she decides, you know, this next year, I'm going to try to read 20 Christian books. She said, man, if I could just get 20 books under my belt in a year, I would begin, I think, to have at least a grasp on what some of these people are talking about. I mean, for instance, you know, the family altar. Some guy stands up there and preaches about the family altar. Well, she doesn't know what that is. She goes to the bookstore after church and says, hey, do you carry those family altars in here? You know, she doesn't have the slightest idea what that is. And people are talking about prayer, and she doesn't know. She's, you know, she gives God her zip code when she prays. She wants to make sure he knows who she is. You know, I think she doesn't have the slightest idea. Well, she wants to learn this stuff. So she sets her goal, but now there's a problem because she has to assess where she is. So step one is setting your goal. We'll put it over on the right because that's where it belongs. Step two would be, what is your present situation? And she decides, you know, right now I'm only reading 3 books a year. That's my present situation. I'm only reading 3 books a year. And that's quite a few because if you take the Reader's Digest away from most of us, the number of books that we read that we don't have to read, we come to about 3 a year, probably, not counting students. And so she said, man, I'm only reading 3 books a year, and I've set my goal to read 20 a year. But that's her present situation. Next, she assesses, what are some things that are helping me in this to reach this goal? She said, what would be some things that would help me? Well, first of all, God, I believe, would be pleased. She said, now, you'd have to consider that a plus, because I'm trying to learn about Him. She said, that would be a help. Secondly, my pastor has offered his help because he's going to, you know, tell me which books to read. Thirdly, she has her desire. So you could say all of those things are going for her. Well, what's going against her? Just call this hurts or hindrances or whatever you want to call it. Hurts, we'll put. Well, to begin with, she does not have a reading program, and she never has had. She's never disciplined herself to do that, and it's tough to pick up a discipline that you've never had. As all of us can probably testify, she thinks, that is trouble. I have a weakness there. I've never done that, you know. What am I going to do? Second thing that's holding her back, she's a slow reader. She's not a speed reader, and she thinks, my gosh, I'm not a great reader. When I look what we've established so far, her goal is 20 books a year. And presently, she's only reading 3 a year. What's going for her? Well, God, her help, and her desire. What's hurting her? She doesn't have a regular program, and she reads slow. So what is her plan? Well, first of all, I'm going to get a list of books. She gets a list. Because until you get the list of books you want to read, you can just forget about your blowing smoke. I'm going to read some Christian books. Which ones? Oh, I don't know. I've got to get a list someday. Well, that's how most of us approach that. But you're blowing smoke until you do that. And her pastor provides that list. Second thing she chooses to do is just figure out, well, how many books do I have to read a month? Or maybe a better way to do it would just be to estimate the pages. Go to the table of contents of those and try to divide them up into 12. How many pages a month do I have to read? So we just put the number, you know, pages. She figures, how many pages a month do I have to read? Third thing she figures out, well, how fast do I read? How fast does it take me to read that number of pages? She says, let's say that she figures out she can read 10 minutes a day for 365 years, 365 days, and conquer. For some of us, it might be 365 years. And conquer that. So she says, well, I can read 10 minutes a day. Fourth thing she does is, well, when am I going to read that 10 minutes a day? Well, in the morning. She thinks, that's about the only time I can do it. I'll just get up 10 minutes earlier. So she develops, she gets a time. And the fifth thing she does is protect it and begin. Now you might say, oh my gosh, that is so mundane and everything. I can't believe you did that. But you know what most of us would do? 14 years later, after we had heard our pastor preach and we picked up a little knowledge, they would have probably given us a Sunday school class because they give you those on quantity of time rather than quality of life. And she would be in there expanding on the premillennial viewpoint. She would have Jesus coming back sometime right after Moses left. You know. And it's not her fault because she never set a goal. And she never decided, what am I going to do and how am I going to get it done? So you have to plan. Cheer up, we're heading for the home stretch and we're almost done. Finished. We're almost finished. Getting my master's degree, you need to get that straight. The fourth step, as we drew up here a while ago, is living the life. As I said at the beginning, we do not draw out our priorities and our goals just so we can tell everybody we've got them. Nor do we get a plan just so we can sit there and work on the thing. The fourth step is living. Once you've gotten your goals fairly well in mind, you've established your priorities to determine which goal I'm going to do first, you've worked out a plan for at least some of those goals to begin, then get on with it. Start living life. And do you know what happens? As you begin living according to the goals that you're working on, some areas in your life begin to change. And then you know what happens? As you begin to grow as a person and as a Christian, your goals begin to change. You get nearer to God and your perspective begins to change and you see that He has a little different idea on this than you thought He did. So therefore, you change a couple of your goals. You might add one, you might just change one. Well, when you do that, you have to rethink your priorities. And when you rethink your priorities and choose those goals, you have to reset your plans. And then you go back and hit it again. And it becomes one continuous growth cycle. We continually rethink what we're doing. As we learn more about God, He directs our minds and we reset our goals, we reset our priorities, and it becomes a lifetime thing of growth. Now the key word is decision. Because once you decide this and you start to live your life, you have a bunch of decisions to make. Let's just say, let me pick somebody out in here. I don't know. We'll pick old Rick out back there. Let's just say that Rick, when he was back still in college or something, let's say he became a Christian back then and he wasn't married yet or anything. And he starts thinking about, well, what do I need to do? What are some things? You know, God's concerned about my life now. What are some goals I should have? And he decides, you know, I'm liable to mess around and get married someday or move off to some other part of the country. I'm getting a little older, and I'm not going to have that much time to spend with my folks. And I think next summer, I'd like to just go home and spend that time with my folks, because that might be the last uninterrupted span of time that I'll ever have with them. So he sets his goal and says, next summer, I'm going to go home and spend it with Mom and Dad. And he's just established that, and he's prayed about it and feels good about it. 2 weeks later, somebody comes running up to him from the BSU and says, Rick, a space has just opened up on the river ministry this summer. We'd like you to come and serve there. Well, see, he's already made his decision. But had he not set a goal, he wouldn't have any basis for making a decision. It would become a matter of who gets to him first. And most of us make decisions exactly like that. Whoever gets to me first, I'll do what they want me to do. And what it amounts to is you either plan your life or somebody else will plan it for you. And I mean, there are little life planners running around all over the place out there. Junior Holy Spirit, you know, that are ready to tell you what God's will is for your life. I mean, you either plan your life or somebody will plan it. And once you make a decision, then you have a basis for, or once you set a goal, you have a basis for deciding. Now, that doesn't mean you can't change your mind if God brings something in and it's clear that this is His will. But most of us don't have any basis for deciding. Somebody calls us, hey, what are you doing tonight? Ah, nothing. You want to go to a show? Sure. They just planned that night of your life for you. You know? Well, personally, gang, I would rather plan my life because I think I'm more qualified to plan my life than you are. I think you're more qualified to plan your life than I am. But I want to plan my life by God's help. Decision is the key. Now, that can get sticky. For instance, when I had set that Tuesday night to spend with my wife, a lot of people didn't understand that. I had a guy call me and said, hey, what are you doing tonight? Staying at home. Great. Listen, we got this Bible study meeting over here at the house, and why don't you come over and speak? No, I'm staying at home. Well, now, he didn't say it, but on the other end of the line, what he was thinking was, don't you love God? Now, he didn't say it, but that is exactly what he was thinking. You're going to stay home when we've got a Bible study you can speak at over here? But see, the thing of it was, he didn't know what my goals were. I did. And at times like that, you might have to make a tough decision. Let me give you Howard Hendricks' principle. Say no every day to something, just to keep in practice. Hey, what are you doing? No. I mean, now be careful who you say that to. But say no to something every day, just to keep in the practice and the habit of doing it. Because your life is going to be lived on the basis of those decisions. Can you stick to what you said you would do? We've set our strategy for life now. Let me give you some things to think about. Some little hints, you could call it. Do's and don'ts, whatever you want to call it. First one is, don't procrastinate. The danger is, in talking about goals and priorities, is it goes something like this. Well, I'll tell you what, as soon as I get married, as soon as I get this new job, as soon as I get out of school, as soon as I get into school, as soon as this happens, as soon as that happens, I will change. No, you won't. It never works like that. Your circumstances will never be much better than they are right now. In fact, all you'll do is get busier as you get older. When I was ministering at Oklahoma Baptist University, there was a kid over there, and I'd spoken on the quiet time that day. And he'd heard me, and he came up to me afterwards, and we talked about this. And I asked him, I said, friend, when do you have your devotional life? And he began to give me this rigmarole. He said, oh, you don't understand, I'm a music major, you know. Got a lot of busy things here, and I'm serving over here and serving over here, and I've got on this committee, and I'm leading North Oklahoma in music. And I mean, you know, I'm just a busy kid, and I really don't have time to fit that in. Well, I didn't push him on that, you know, he's a big kid, and I thought I'd... But you know, I was there every Wednesday for 2 years on that campus. And every Wednesday at 4 o'clock, like clockwork, he would come in and sit down and watch Star Trek in the TV. And at 5 o'clock, he would watch Adam 12. And at 5:30, he'd watch some news. And I'd be scurrying around, gathering kids up to put them on the bus. And every time I'd walk by the TV room, there he'd sit. Now, I wasn't there Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, or Friday, but I have a sneaking suspicion that had I been there, I would have seen him. Now, see, his problem was not that he didn't have the time. His problem was he didn't want to. And that's our problem. Our problem is not time. Our problem is us. Don't procrastinate. Another thing. Now, we probably don't even need to mention this, but we may need to someday, so I'll go ahead and mention it. We don't set goals to become rigid. Our purpose in setting a schedule is to have freedom, not to become a slave to the schedule. We want to control our schedule. We don't want it to control us. We don't want to get like this. Driving down the road on our way to lead our Bible study so our guys can become godly. Elderly lady over here with a flat tire waving frantically. Sorry, ma'am, I'm on my way to the Bible study to help my guys become godly. You know, I've set this up. This is a very important part of my life. You know, well, probably the thing to do would be just let the Bible study go late 15 minutes and stop and help this lady. Or when I'm in my office and some lady calls and her son has just been hit on a drug charge and she's just crying and I'm sitting there and I've got my day lined out and I say, yes, yes. Ma'am, I tell you what, can I call you back on this? Because I am really busy. I mean, I've got my goals set up, and you know, God expects those of us as ministers to lead the way. Could I call you back next Tuesday? Because I have a slot open there. Or when my little two-year-old girl, when I'm in studying my church history, and I've got a test the next day, and she's drawn something with her magic markers, and she wants Daddy to see it. And she comes racing in there. I had best stop and look, because if I don't, someday she may not be interested in coming in to show me what she drew with her magic markers. And she's not going to understand. I mean, I can't say to her, Liz, don't you remember my talk on goals and priorities? All she knows is that she's drawn something. She wants Daddy to see it. So we don't set these things to become rigid. We set it to control it, not that it controls us. Three more and we'll quit. I've got to say this. One thing that can discourage you is when you set your system up so perfectly. And you've got your days lined out here, and I'm from 2:45 to 2:49, I'm doing this. You know, and then the whole thing just falls in. And it doesn't take much to do that. A flat tire, a breakdown on the highway. I mean, if your car breaks down, you can just forget the day. You have to get that car off the highway. You have to get it in a shop. You have to talk to the guy about what he wants done. You have to go to your office, and then when he calls you and he tells you it's done, and you go over there, and the guy says, I didn't call you and tell you the thing's not done. And you have to go back. I mean, your whole... And then you go back, you know, and your wife calls, and your little girl has flushed a tree down the toilet, and water is shooting all over, and she keeps floating by, and mother's trying to grab her and rescue her. And then your pastor comes in, and he says, Mike, I have 47 hospital visits to make. Could you help me? And everything that you had planned for 4 days just goes down the drain. Well, at that particular time, it's best to just back up, smile, work your way through that, and start again. Because as the old saying goes, when you're up to your neck in alligators, it's hard to remember that your objective was to drain the swamp. You know, when they're crawling all over you, chewing on you, it's very difficult to remember what it was you went in that swamp to do. Best to back out of the swamp, get a new perspective, and then go at it from a different angle. Because your schedule will collapse. I mean, you may think that it won't, but you hold on. People do not get sick or die or things like that on regularly scheduled timetables. Your car does not break down at convenient times. Two more. Let me give you two little hints that I use now that I hope will be helpful to you. When some time comes up that you had already planned and all of a sudden it becomes free, use it wisely. For instance, maybe you've got some friends coming over for dinner Thursday night and they call and he's sick and they can't come. Well, now you've got 4 hours on your hands that you didn't know you had. And you have a great decision to make. You can either be blessed by the Incredible Hulk and Charlie's Angels for the rest of the evening, which can be something to do if that's a family thing, you know, if you can do that. My little girl loves the Incredible Hulk, you know. We sit there and she just screams and just gets great. I really enjoy it. But I mean, if that's what you're doing, or you can use your evening for something worthwhile. Now, I like to do this. About 2 weeks ago, I use it for what I call people time. So about 2 weeks ago, I went into my office at 7 o'clock one morning and I worked until about 9. Had an appointment canceled at 9 that was supposed to be there. Something else happened and I really didn't have anything to do until 11. I was caught up. Had 2 hours on my hands. Now, at times like that, I could have gone into the music minister, drunk a Coke, and we could have talked for 2 hours about what we did in high school. Now, that was one option. But what I did was I pulled out 9 little note cards and 9 little envelopes, and I wrote 9 letters of appreciation to people that I had been wanting to do for a while, and I hadn't had the time. And I just wrote those out just by hand. And you know, about 6 of those people have come up to me and told me how much they appreciated that. Now, I didn't do it so they'd appreciate it. I did it because I appreciated them. But I think that was wise use of the time. And boy, anytime I get unplanned time, I try to think, now what can I do? I mean, I might want to read Call of the Wild. That might be a sea goal that's been sitting there for years. And I'll just use this time. I might want to go play tennis. And last of all, I hope that you can get used to using a list of things to do. And I carry a little book like this. There's nothing holy about this. I do not believe that the Apostle Paul had one of these. This is although he could have, I can see it. Timothy, tomorrow we go to Ephesus. Yes. He could have had. I don't know that. I wasn't there. The original manuscripts don't carry it. But it is very helpful to have a list of things to do. Let me show you a day. I found one a while ago that I'll use again. You see that? Now that looks kind of sloppy. You're too far away. But that's Monday, November 6th. Monday's the day that I spend in my office. There were 16 things to do that day. And I nailed 13 of them. Three of them I didn't get to. Not a bad day. And at the end of the day, I walked out of my office knowing that I had a fruitful and productive day. I had done a lot of things that I needed to get done that were in line with my goals. Let's see what next Monday looks like. Okay, I've only got two things so far for next Monday, but I've got the whole weekend ahead of me yet, so it'll fill up. I've got to rent that van for the ski trip. We need another van. I've got to do that. And I've got to go buy the insurance. My car insurance is expired. So I've got that down. Now quit laughing. Don't you have a car? So I've got those things down to do. And I guarantee you, by the time I work my way through tomorrow, I'll have about 10 more to do. I carry this with me every place I go. I'll be riding down the road, and I'll think. Now, she wanted me to call her, and I haven't called her. And I'll pull my little book out, which also increases the faith of those riding with me. And I will write down, call Margaret. Or I'll write down, I'll say, you know, Mike, you have been putting off planning that retreat, and you need to do that tomorrow. So I'll write down, plan that retreat. I carry this thing with me. Every place I go, it sits beside me at night. Because sometimes in the middle of the night, I'll wake up with an inspired thought. And I'm serious about that. I'll go pick that baby up and write it down. Because if I don't, I will forget it. And when I go up to somebody and I say, can you do this for me? And they say yes, and they don't write it down, I think to myself, you are not going to do it. I mean, now you got good intentions, but you will not get that done. And I just cross it off in the back of my mind and I go do it. Because I know they're not going to do it. Well, let me close with this, and then we'll take some questions. Or do y'all want to ask questions? Shall we just dismiss and go home? The reason this is important, and I think you'll be surprised how little time you've actually got. Let me divide your week into 21 segments. That's a simplistic way of doing it, but if you'll allow me, I'll do it that way. 21 segments. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Good. We'll use this as morning, afternoon, and evening. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Morning, afternoon, and evening. Now, if you're an average Southern Baptist church member, this is what your week looks like. That's already gone. That's already gone. This is gone. You're working 40 hours a week. Those are already gone. You have one thing a week that you do at night on a regular basis. Maybe you bowl. Maybe you get together and do something else. Maybe you're like me and you go to church visitations. That's gone. Say you bowl on Friday nights. Everybody usually has one regular activity they do. That's gone. Usually on Saturdays, we'll either clean house or we'll do something on a regular basis on Saturday. Look how many spaces you've got left. Now that is an average life. Just think about your life. I mean, if you've got that much, you are a free person. So see, the issue is not what you're going to do with these days. These are already pretty much decided. I mean, you have to earn a living. You don't have to pray about that, you know. You have to pull up to red light and say, oh God, do you want me to stop? I mean, that's pretty clear. when it comes to eating and sleeping and working, that's pretty clear. So the hours that are really at issue are these. What am I going to do with those? Now the problem is not time. The problem is us. And we need to remember that. Well, do you have any questions or observations? Maybe you've had some success in this area you can share with us, or maybe something I've said you don't agree with or is unclear or something. And I'll admit I'm not an authority, so I may not be able to answer your question. But if you have a question or observation, why don't you make it? And maybe the rest of us will learn from it. Yes, ma'am.
Okay, your third point on your hand side, I heard you explain it, but I didn't know what you were talking about.
Well, that would have been the system can collapse, I believe. And don't get frustrated when it does, because it will. There will be days when your whole plan goes right out the window. Just flow with it. Start again the next morning. Yes?
I've done that same thing. I've done some reading on that by goal-setting people who've written some books, and I've always tried to set my goals a little bit higher now, and that always constitutes my way. And I'd rather burn my candle at both ends than to come to the end of my life and only burn it.
Yeah, I think that's a good principle. In setting your goals, make them a challenge. Now make them reachable. You don't want to set your goal that you're going to water ski around the world by the end of the week. Now that's not practical. But you might water ski around the Lake of the Ozarks by the end of the week. Make it practical so you can do it. But make it a challenge. If you don't set your goal any higher than you are right now, you've accomplished nothing. You just wasted your time. Make it a challenge. You know, if you know that you need to exercise more and you're running a half mile a day, run 3/4 of a mile a day. Kick your goal up. Do something. But that's a good observation. Yes, sir?
I'd like to know how you integrate the Word in making all these plans and putting them into
action. That's a very, very good question. I think one thing that we have to do in the Word is we have to look at what are God's obvious priorities from the Scripture, right from the beginning. 1 Corinthians 10:31. So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. Matthew, of course, you should love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. We would have to consider that the first priority. So when we start considering any goals, that would have to be right at the top. Our walk with Jesus Christ is our first priority. Well, then we have to look through the Scriptures, and the rest of them you have to look at. Family, though, will come out. Work will come out. Ministry will come out. Those four will show up pretty easily. You know, and you know that those are pretty high on God's priority list. From then on, for things like recreation and everything else, I really think it's just a personal thing. It comes from just prayer, seeking the Lord. And you know, when God gave us a mind, He gave us a lot of leading. And some goals about things to accomplish is, what do I like to do? I mean, what is something my wife would like me to accomplish? For instance, my wife very much would like me to put the 2 doorknobs on the baby's closet doors. She asked me that last week, and I have not done it yet. I could probably assume, put that down in my little book.
That's right.
I could probably assume that that would be a goal I could establish. You know, what does my wife want me to do? So I think on one hand, we go for the clear scriptural priorities, and the rest of it, you know, we just pray. Because sometimes difficult decisions come up, and we've got 2 goals sitting side by side, and we don't know which one to do. You know, I mean, they both look important, and we have to say, God, you know, I feel like punting here. Do you have any ideas? And I believe, you know, that God, I believe God can work through that. If we're just honest. You know, He's watched all of us long enough to know that most of us don't know what we're doing. So He's very anxious to help. You know. One more question. We're going to have to go. Yes, ma'am.
Not a question. Just something that's been helpful to me as far as setting goals is. I read this book by Ann Ortland, and she mentioned to not always spend a hard time doing the urgent things, but do the important. Otherwise, it's going to hold our life to bring out lives.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. You know, that's a good point. In fact, there's a little booklet called Tyranny of the Urgent that's worthwhile to read. The Tyranny of the Urgent, you know, where you spend your whole life taking care of the immediate things rather than taking care of the important things, which might mean you have to let some of the immediate things slide. If the house is burning, let it burn.